are on air for Fan for Racing Radio. This is Friday morning, May the 3rd, and we're putting together our podcast for our Kansas NASCAR Weekend Preview and Hot Topic Sound Off. Joining me for today's show is Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Looking for a great weekend of racing across the board. I know locally I won't get to, unfortunately, and I know some of the stories we're going to cover are going to talk about that as well, but looking forward to some good racing anyhow.
Yes, indeed. And I'm going to make an announcement right now, too, and that is Jay is back, and he is going to be back from here on out, maybe a few exceptions here and there, for our Friday podcast of our preview show and our Hot Topic Sound Off. So welcome back, Jay.
Thank you. Excited about that. And I appreciate you as well as Brian Eberle there for filling in for me on Thursdays. I was really appreciative. Again, can't say enough about the team we have here at Fan for Racing Blog Talk Radio, and look forward to being back on a regular basis.
Yes, indeed. Now, Brian actually is on his way to Kansas Speedway as we speak. He's going to be there for the weekend of racing. Watch his social media, because he has been posting updates about his trip out there. But today, we are going to start with some short track news and some of the upcoming races out at the short tracks around the country. And then we're going to update the ARCA East and ARCA West series and preview the ARCA Menards series race that is taking place out in Kansas. Now, afterward, we'll comment on part of the Ford Media interview with Drew Blickensterfer. He is the number 10 Stuart Haas Racing crew chief, and Noah Gregson is that driver. And I'll tell you what, he's been doing pretty well in his return to racing, and specifically with Drew Blickensterfer and Stuart Haas Racing. After that, we are going to update the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Afterward, we'll preview the NASCAR Truck and Cup Series races out at Kansas Speedway. And, of course, we end our episode with our Hot Topic Sound Off conversation. So with that, Jay, should we go ahead and get started with some of the short track news?
Well, let me guess, since I brought it up, you're going to let me do the first one under the dirt category, and that's Thursday's planned World Outlaws late model race at Mississippi Thunder Speedway was canceled due to heavy rains. Now, Friday and Saturdays, we'll see a pair of $25,000 features at the track, though. You can check out and follow more on worldoutlaws.com and Matt Skipper covering those stories. So hopefully the weather stays away up there.
Yes, we do hope so. The weather has definitely been an issue this year as it relates to short track racing. Now, Flow Racing is offering a $75,000 to the winner of the Castrol Flow Night in America Championship if they have perfect attendance, that is. In other words, they need to race all of the events in order to be eligible for that $75,000 bonus. So that's pretty cool. You can read about that over at Flow Racing.
And we got another – man, how did you time there set this one up? I got the Lucas Oil late model trip to Ponderosa Speedway has been postponed. Oh. And that one's on lucasdirt.com. I don't know if that one's weather-related or not, so you have to check out the article to find out.
I apologize. I did not do that on purpose. It just happened to work out that way.
Sharon, you said welcome back to the show. Oh, I was going to say, you said welcome back to the show. Your role here today is bring all the bad news.
not intentionally. Okay, now we're going to move to some short tracks. A stacked field, and I can never pronounce this track correctly. I know there's a correct way to pronounce it. Heading to Monaco Speedway for this weekend's NASCAR Wheelin' Modified Tour race. Rob Blount writes about that over at Flow Racing. So that was my challenge, Jay.
Well, my challenge is to try and remember a Larry McNugget here from SiriusXM this morning, and one of them would be the pronunciation of that speedway. Monadoc, I think, is close as well. One of the drivers, and I didn't catch the name quick enough, but has a chance to tie Ted Christopher for third all-time list on the Whelen Modified Tours. Again, I cannot remember that driver's name. They said it so quick, and I can't rewind on the radio, but... So a lot of big things going on with the Whelen Modified Tour Series. The Cars Tour, though, also has a big day of racing planned today at Speedway. So there's good to get a look at the doubleheader event, and that's also on Flow Racing coverage.
Also, Sam Rameau has been reinstated by NASCAR nearly 7 months after his involvement in a brawl that took place out at Thompson Speedway Motorsports Park. Matt Weaver writes about that over at Short Track Scene if you want to know more about that. Next, we've got several races that are coming up on dirt. Do you want to cover the dirt version races, Jay?
All right. We got a bunch of them. Starting on Dirt Vision at 5:45 p.m. will be the World Outlaw Sprint Cars from Eldora Speedway. The High Limit Racing is at Lakewood Speedway, and that'll be covered on Flow Racing at 7:15 p.m. Now, the World Outlaw Late Models, they're at that Mississippi Thunder Valley, supposed to be tonight at 7:15 p.m., covered on Dirt Vision. USAC's Let's Race 2, they're at Eldora Speedway. That'll be Flow Racing at 6 p.m. American Sprint Car Series, the RPM Speedway, 7:45 p.m. and Dirt Vision. Back up to 6 o'clock at Dirt Vision. You got weekly racing. That'll be from Attica Raceway Park at 6 p.m. Then 6:45 p.m. over at Flow Racing. Weekly racing, Utica Rome Speedway. Some other weekly racing is William Grove Speedway at 7 p.m. on Dirt Vision. Then you also got the IRA Sprints at Ogilvy Raceway, 7 p.m. on Flow Racing. Quick note, if you don't know where Ogilvy Raceway is, that is in central Minnesota, about 15 miles east of St. Cloud. So I think my nephew is going to be there tonight. Let's see. What else we got? The Spring Nationals, that'll be at Sugar Creek Raceway, 7 p.m. on Flow Racing. And the IMCA Weekly Racing from Marshalltown Speedway, that'll be covered on Flow Racing at 7:45 p.m. So I know the internet, you don't have a channel changer, but you need two sites up, Flow Racing and Dirt Vision.
Indeed. Also, there's short track racing in that Cars Tour that we mentioned earlier at Ace Speedway. That starts at 4:15 p.m. on Go Racing. And like Jay said, you want to have a couple of sites up if you want to know what kind of racing is going on, which day and what time, at what track. And that's at Racing America, and also Flow Racing has a great schedule that they put up. But there's another big event happening this weekend. That's the SRL Southwest Tour, the Stockton 99 Spears Prolate Model event. And that's May 3rd and 4th. And you can read about that over at the SRL Southwest Tour website. So lots of racing taking place this weekend and a lot to look forward to. We're on 10-minute schedules here in our first half hour, so real quick, I'm going to update the ARCA Menards Series East and West. They are not racing this weekend, but their next races day are going to be at for the East. It's the Music City 150 on May the 11th at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time at Nashville Fairground Speedway. That will be available for live streaming on Flow Racing. And then later in the month, the Portland 112 for the ARCA Menards Series West is May 31st at 8 p.m. Eastern Time at Portland International Raceway. And that, too, is available for live streaming at Flow Racing. But what we're going to talk about next is the Tide 150 for the ARCA Menards Series. So they are racing at Kansas Speedway this weekend, May the 4th, at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and that will be televised live on Fox Sports 1. That race is actually Saturday, May the 5th, and radio coverage is on MRN Radio. They'll be racing a distance of 100 laps over to cover a distance of 150 miles.
And the Tide 150 at Kansas Speedway, it's the fifth race of the 2024 ARCA Menard Series season, which this being the 28th series race at Kansas Speedway and the 1,558th race in series history. So there's a lot of history when it comes to the ARCA Menard Series.
Yes, there is. And this is the time of the year where it starts to pick up, and as we get closer to summer, they get into full swing of their season. Now, previous ARCA Menard Series winners at Kansas Speedway include Jason Jarrett in 2001. Frank Kimmel has three wins there in 2002, 6, and 13. Shelby Howard in 2003. Ryan Hemphill in 2004. Chad Blount in 2005. Scott Legrassi Jr. in 2007. Scott Speed in 2008. Parker Kligerman in 2009. Then it was Ty Dillon in 2010, Alex Bowman in 11 and 12, Spencer Gallagher in 2014, Mason Mitchell in 15, Chase Briscoe in 16, Michael Self in 17, Sheldon Creed in 18, Christian Eckes in 19, Brett Holmes in 2020. Then it was Corey Himes in 2020 and 22. In between there, it was Ty Gibbs in 2021. Nick Sanchez in 21 and 22, Jesse Love in 23, and Connor Mosack also won in 23 at Kansas Speedway. So a lot of, like you said, a lot of history at Kansas Speedway for the ARCA Menard Series.
Well, and covering the next section, that makes up for having to cover the rainouts there, because I like talking about this. There have been 10 drivers that have earned their first career ARCA Menard Series victory at Kansas Speedway. Of those ones Sharon listed, you heard Jason Jarrett, Scott Legacy, Scott Speed, Ty Dillon, Spencer Gallagher, Michael Self, Brett Holmes, Corey Heim, Nick Sanchez, and Connor Mosack. So we'll see if that can't happen again this weekend.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. Now, Connor Mosack, who won at Kansas Speedway just last fall, will make his second ARCA start of the season in the Tide 150. Mosack is driving his family's number 28 Pinnacle Racing Group Chevrolet, and that car finished second with Carson Quapel driving last season. Now, Mosack finished fourth at Phoenix Raceway in his only other series appearance, and that was in 2024. So some history there with that car for sure.
Well, and talking about ones that raced last year, Dean Thompson finished second in last year's spring race at Kansas as he's making his first ARCA Menard Series start of 2024, and that'll be in a Venturini Motorsports-prepared Toyota.
Okay, Mark, talk about milestones. Well, Toni Breidinger is making her 50th career ARCA Menard Series start in the Tide 150. She finished a career best third last fall at Kansas Speedway. Let's see if she can better that this year.
Ryan Roulette, that's another great story when you get to see it. Ryan Roulette will not be the only member of his family racing at Kansas Speedway this weekend. His 7-year-old son, Nolan, is going to be competing in the NASCAR Youth Series event that runs Thursday through Saturday.
Oh, that's very cool storyline. Now, 10-time series champion Frank Kimmel, he earned a second, his record-breaking 80th and final win of the ARCA Menard Series career at Kansas Speedway, and that was in 2013. Very, very big storyline when you're talking about Frank Kimmel and his association with the ARCA Menard Series. He is the only driver to hit 80 wins in that series.
Wow. Now we got 2-time ARCA Menard Series winner at Kansas Speedway, Cup Series driver now Alex Bowman, still holds the track qualifying record at Kansas, set in 2012 at 29.258 seconds, which equates to 184.559 miles per hour.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, the ARCA Menards Series race record at Kansas Speedway is held by the series champion, and that's Christian Eckes. He set that record back in 2019 at 1 hour, 3 minutes, 31 seconds, and it equates to 141.695 miles per hour. So some really great drivers there setting records at Kansas.
Now, this race will be run under what they call a modified live pit stop format. Every caution is an opportunity to pit, and drivers who do choose to pit will realign behind the drivers who do not elect to make the pit stop in the order they entered pit road and then following order. Lead lap cars that do not make the pit stop, then lead lap cars that did on their scheduled lap, then you have the lap cars that did not make a pit stop, lap cars that did, and then the free pass recipient, as well as wave around cars and cars under penalty. Now, a team can change tires and add fuel during the same pit stop, but not simultaneously. So they got to do one or the other and then swap it up. Tires can be changed under green only if damaged and approved by an official. Fuel is not to be added under green.
So good to know those specific rules for the ARCA Menards Series. Now, here's another record for the most lead changes in the series at Kansas Speedway. 11 set in the inaugural race back in 2001 and matched again in 2006 and 2007. The fewest number of lead changes is zero. That was set in 2021 when Ty Gibbs led all 100 laps. Another amazing driver coming up through the ranks.
And then we got to talk about that pesky yellow flag. The record for the most cautions in an ARCA Menards Series race at Kansas Speedway, that was set at 10 back in 2006 when they had a record 53 laps under caution. But the good news, there can be few, as the fewest cautions was set in 2019 at 2, and matched in 2020 and 2023. The fewest laps run under caution, which is also set in 2020, is 6.
That's pretty amazing. Maybe they'll do it again this week. Now, 3 ARCA Menards Series races at Kansas have gone into overtime. In 2009, that race was won by Parker Kligerman. In 2021, it was Nick Sanchez taking home the victory, and Corey Heim took home the victory in 2022. Those are the 3 races that have gone into overtime.
And then 2 ARCA Menards Series races have been at Kansas Speedway have been shortened. In 2004, the race was scheduled for 100 laps, shortened to 64, and in 2013, scheduled for 99 laps, but it was shortened to 97.
Okay. Now, should the race need to be extended into an overtime this year, there will be an unlimited attempt at a 2-lap green-white checkered finish. Now, should the caution be displayed after the white flag, there will be unlimited attempts at a 1-lap green and white together finish. So, again, rules that are specific to the ARCA Menards Series. We always like to make sure that you know that going into the race. Now, next up, I do have available here, and we're not going to be able to play the whole interview because, unfortunately, the whole interview is a little bit longer than what we're able to do. But I am going to play a portion, probably about 5 minutes, of the interview that took place this week with Drew Blickensderfer. He is the crew chief for the number 10 Ford at Stuart Haas Racing. The entire length of the interview is close to 30 minutes, 28 minutes and 40 seconds. Again, we're just going to play the first 5 minutes, and then Jay and I will give our comments afterwards. So here we go.
All right, so welcome to the Ford Performance Weekly Media Teleconference. We've got Drew Blickensderfer, the crew chief for the number 10 Ford of Noah Gregson. And Drew, let me just kick things off. Obviously, Noah, you guys have been enjoying a little bit of success here, some good runs at the beginning of the season. Seems like you guys are clicking, the two of you. Just tell us about it a little bit.
Yeah, you know, when word got to me that Noah was probably going to drive the 10 car in 24, I immediately reached out to him. We invited him over to my house for dinner, spent some time with him through the off season, got to know Noah, and tried to start that relationship as quick as possible. It came together kind of late, so I wanted to get to know him as much as possible before the season started. So we started off good. We got to know each other, and then since we've been racing this year, we tried to figure out, hey, what caused you not to be prepared last year? What were you thinking? And I think all of us thought Noah had great talent to drive race cars. He showed it in Xfinity. It didn't work out for him last year driving Cup cars. Why was that? What can we do better? So after a few weeks into the season, we started getting into routines to where we prepare for the weekend together. His backpack, his laptop on the table right next to me right there. He'll probably be walking in a little bit. We'll go into the Ford simulator here in about a half an hour or so. Just things to prepare ourselves. Noah's talent level is extremely high driving race cars on Sunday. Figuring out what line he needs to run, figuring out how to make passes, where to put his car, things like that. The things we had to work on was how to unload to where he was comfortable, get up to speed quickly, and then qualify better. And we put a ton of emphasis on that at Dover. We got some results at Dover with qualifying. So our game plan seems to be working.
Awesome. I am going to go ahead and just kick it over here for questions. If you guys have questions for Drew, just raise your hand and I will call on you. First up in the queue is Greg Engel. Greg, go ahead.
Hey, Drew. Good to see you, pal. And I'm happy for you and the success with Noah. Very great guy there. I want to kind of ask about something else, though. Sunday, Ryan Preece had the fire, had smoke in the car. They had to park it. And obviously, it's not your car, but you're on the same team. I'm wondering, we had the issues with the smoke in the cars and the fire, and we think back to when Kevin had the incident at Darlington, and he was blaming it on crappy parts. Do you think what happened Sunday, first off, have you heard what happened Sunday? Did they actually find out?
Yes, I have.
And two, do you think it's indicative that maybe the problems are resurfacing? Because that was Ford that was happening to earlier on, and we haven't had them in a while, and now it's back.
Yeah, knock on wood. That was self-inflicted. That was the bolts between the headers and the collectors keeping everything together. We had some issues there amongst the teams on our side. They were not installed correctly, and it was allowing the collectors to kind of disattach from the headers, kind of fall on that rocker box and be causing issues. So it was a self-inflicted error that, you know, a little change in process that someone didn't catch, and it was close to happening on all of our cars, to be honest with you. So they were unfortunately the victim of it. But when we got back to the race shop, all of our cars were close to having a similar issue. So obviously that gets rectified quickly. Everything gets torn out of our Kansas cars and fixed. But I think NASCAR has done a good job. I think us as a group, because it was more relevant for us last year or the year before, we've taken a lot of effort to keep that from happening, and knock on wood, I think we're in a good spot with that. We have to make sure we clean up our end to make sure the parts are installed correctly.
All right. Your thoughts. He covered a couple of really important points there.
Yeah, certainly. I want to start with, since he finished with that, talking about the foam fire. I know during the race broadcast, Kevin Harvick kind of was disgusted, I'll use that word, you know, saying that they thought that issue had been fixed. And I saw this article pop up, I believe, on Jayski where it talked about it. It was an incorrectly installed part, that bolt. and Drew Blickensderfer. They were transparent about it there. They said they missed it. It slipped through the cracks, and apparently through several others on cars still at the shop that he said they checked. So know it happens. And I know Ryan Preece expressed his frustration rather quickly in his post, or not post race, his post race interview, which unfortunately was in the middle of the race, that's what he had apparently already heard, that it was self-inflicted. So he also was a little upset with that. But like I said, it happens. They've addressed it, and hopefully we don't see that anymore. On the good news side of it, talk about, and I know we got this kind of in some of, or one of our hot topics we can talk about, but the Fords are starting to show speed. Noah Gregson, one of the top Ford performing teams in most weeks. So I really like what Drew said. They sat down with him when they found out he was, or when he found out he was coming to the team, and said, "Hey, things haven't been going the best for you. What can we do? You give us that input. What can we do? What didn't work? Why? How can we change it? What can we address?" I think that kind of communication and partnership working together, that's where you run into some of these driver crew chief duos that, you know, end up can't being beat. So look out as they develop and build upon that, trust each other and lean on each other. That's what makes a tough team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was really happy to hear him say that he took the initiative to really get to know who Noah Gregson is. And you're right. The fact that he said, what hasn't worked for you in the past, what can we do differently, how can I help you, I think that helps a driver feel confidence, I think, in his crew chief right away, knowing that he's on his side and wants to do everything he can to help him be successful. So this could be one of those matchups that really work out well, and Drew Blickensderfer may or may not be the guy that Noah Gregson has needed in his corner to help him develop his career. We've certainly seen an improvement on the racetrack, and we know that the Fords have been struggling. They don't have a win yet this year, and, yeah, we're going to talk about that in a Hot Topic Sound-Off segment. But there are some signs that they're moving in the right direction, and Noah Gregson is one of those guys that have had some success in that number 10 car since coming to that team. So I really think that this is a good matchup for Noah Gregson and Drew Blickensderfer, and I think they're going to have a lot more success as the season progresses. So we'll see how it continues to play out. But I was real happy to hear him take the time that he took to get to know Noah Gregson.
Well, and the last thing I want to add there, we know Drew Blickensderfer's history goes all the way back to Matt Kenseth when he was with Roush Fenway Racing in the DeWalt team. That's when I actually got to meet him at, I believe it was Richmond Raceway. But what you mentioned it. Fords are struggling a little bit, and we will get into that in Hot Topics. But what happens? They're already on the uptrend. What happens when the Ford hits their peak with speed and performance and pairs up with what Drew Blickensderfer and Noah Gregson are already doing? That's a good thought to have.
That is a very good thought to have. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to when we see Ford start to hit victory lane and what's going to happen there. We know that these things kind of go in waves. So right now it's been two teams, Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports, but we'll be seeing some changes hopefully in the second half of this year's regular season. We are now at the top of the hour. That means it's time for us to get into our next topic, which is the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Now, they are not racing this weekend. They have a nice weekend off. Their next race, though, is going to be at Darlington Raceway next weekend for the Crown Royal Purple Bag Project 200. It's a 1.366-mile asphalt oval. They'll race Saturday, May the 11th, at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So, during this off weekend, Jay?
I'm sorry, my computer messed up here. What are we looking at here?
The NASCAR Xfinity Series, they have an off weekend. I'll go ahead and take this topic, and then you can take the next one.
Okay.
It's on the teams page in the order that we're going, if you want to check that out. The NASCAR Xfinity Series wrapped up their 10th race of the season just last weekend out at Dover. And this weekend, they have a break before they race at Darlington next weekend. Now, last Saturday, it was Joe Gibbs Racing's Ryan Truex that found victory lane for the second consecutive year for a win at his home track of Dover. But because he's a part-time driver in the Xfinity Series, he's not eligible for the playoffs. I think it's unfortunate that he's part-time. I hope he gets a full-time sponsor. Now, of the 8 different winners in 10 races so far this season, only 4 of them have clinched their spot into the playoffs by virtue of wins. That includes Austin Hill with his wins at Daytona and Atlanta. Chandler Smith won at Phoenix and Richmond. Sam Mayer at Texas. And Jesse Love punched his ticket into the playoffs with his win at Talladega. Now, Chandler Smith currently holds the lead in the Xfinity Series point standings at 394 points. Although he's yet to post a win this season, Cole Custer is right on his tail. He's just 1 point back from Chandler Smith. Now, sliding in at third is Austin Hill. He's 17 points back. And his rookie RCR teammate, Jesse Love, right behind him at 57 points back. Also searching for a win this season is a veteran, Justin Allgaier. Excuse me. He sits in fifth in the standings at 313 points. That's 81 points back. Riley Herbst is 91 points back. A.J. Allmendinger, 99 back. Sheldon Creed, 117 back. And they all fill in the next three spots. Parker Kligerman has had some solid finishes this season. That puts him in ninth in the points at 261. That's 133 points back. Anthony Alfredo back 147. Same as Sammy Smith, 147 back. Brandon Jones is 162 back. And they round out the top 12 in points. Ryan Sieg is still in the playoff hunt with 225 points and some near wins in the last few weeks, so don't count him out yet. Ryan Sieg could still make it into the playoffs this year. But the lady in black wants to dance, Jay.
Yeah, you mentioned that off week with that, waiting in the wings to dance at Darlington Raceway standouts. 3 drivers in the field have conquered the 1.366-mile track, and they'll be pushing to land themselves in victory lane yet again as they look to score that first win of the season. You mentioned Junior Motorsports teammates Justin Allgaier and Brandon Jones, as well as Stuart Haas's racing Cole Custer. Now, Allgaier is a force to be reckoned with at Darlington, where he's got 2 wins coming in 21 and 22, a total of 7 top fives and 10 top tens in his 7 starts. He's a strong finish, a string of strong finishes in the last 6 starts at the track, all of them being in the top 10. And Brandon Jones' win at Darlington, that came in 2020 after taking the lead from Ross Chastain in the final 2 laps. In his 12 starts, he's posted the one win in 2020, 2 top fives and 5 top tens. Now Custer, he's never had a bad race at Darlington. He posted the win in 2019, top 5 finish in 4 of his 5 starts. His only finish outside the top 5 was his debut at the track in 2017, and he finished 9th.
Okay, all gas and no brakes. Well, it's Kansas Speedway up for some. Although the Xfinity Series is not racing this weekend, their truck series is racing, and there's 2 drivers that we'll be using this weekend to get some more time in the driver's seat in the Cup Series. So So Austin Hill and Riley Herbst are those two drivers. Hill is getting behind the wheel of the number 33 Chevrolet for Richard Childress Racing. It will be a second Cup Series start of the season and his first at Darlington Raceway. Herbst is joining Rick Ware Racing, and he'll be behind the wheel of the number 15 Ford. It'll also be his second Cup Series start of the season and his first race at Darlington Raceway. So a couple of drivers to keep your eyes on from the Xfinity Series driving up in the Cup Series this year or this week.
Well, and some of those drivers, they might be spending their off weekend counting their money, as the Dash for Cash bonus was another huge success. The final race of the Dash for Cash, it was our Motorsports, Anthony Alfredo, who snagged the final NASCAR Xfinity Series Dash for Cash win, taking home the $100,000 bonus. He beat out his competition, Riley Herbst, Jesse Love, and Ryan Sieg, with a ninth place finish to take home that big check at Dover. Overall, the Xfinity Dash for Cash program proved to be another year of success. We saw four different winners in the program this year. Anthony Alfredo is joined by Eric Almirola, who won at Richmond, Sam Merritt, Texas, Ryan Sieg at Talladega, as well as then Anthony Alfredo. And I just want to say, not that I don't enjoy seeing any team or drivers win it, but we saw some teams that really needed it this year. Some of the underfunded teams picked up those Dash for Cash. And I think that makes this year maybe even a bigger success than in years past, truthfully, from my opinion.
Yeah, I think so, too. It was good to see some different people grabbing that bonus. And like you said, some of those teams really can use that money. So it's really good to see that happening. Now, we talked about Noah Gregson a little bit earlier, racing in the Cup Series with his crew chief, Drew Blickensterfer. But they've decided that he's going to run a few Xfinity Series races as well. He's running full-time with the number 10, Stewart Haas Racing Ford. But he's going to be back in action for four races in the Xfinity Series this year. He's getting behind the wheel of the number 30 for Rhett Jones Racing in a Ford. And with the help of a technical alliance with Stewart Haas Racing, Rhett Jones Racing has competed full-time in the ARCA Menards Series. So his first race will be at Charlotte Motor Speedway later on this month. He'll also be racing at Nashville, Michigan, and Daytona. The Charlotte race will be his first Xfinity Series start since the 2022 championship at Phoenix Raceway. So Gregson says he's grateful for that opportunity to compete in the series, and he hopes to pick up exactly where he left off. So we'll see if that actually happens. So any thoughts about Greg? Go ahead.
Yeah, there is. I think there's two sides to it. You talked about it being Rhett Jones Racing Ford, that they've competed full-time in the ARCA Menards Series. They're going to have that alliance with Stewart Haas Racing. We know that, again, Ford just as a whole looking to improve. So, but also you look at seat time for Noah Gregson. I know there's not necessarily a lot specifically that transfers now from the Xfinity Series to the Cup side, but just the extra seat time. And again, good runs. We know what Noah Gregson was able to accomplish in the Xfinity Series, getting back out running good in some of these other races, just that confidence boost. We've seen it with drivers that go to the Truck Series or Xfinity or anything, kind of that confidence boost, reassurance that, hey, they haven't lost their talent. Something's just not clicking right in another situation. So I think that helps develop that. So I think it's a good thing all the way around for both the race team as well as driver Noah Gregson.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to go ahead. I know we're ahead of schedule, but we're going to go ahead and go into the Truck Series now. They are racing at Kansas Speedway, and there is a ton of information in the Cup Series, so any extra time we have, I'm sure we'll use it. All right, the next race for the Truck Series is the Heart of America 200 at Kansas this weekend, the 1.5-mile asphalt oval. They'll race Saturday, May the 4th, at 8 p.m. Eastern, and it will be televised starting at 7 p.m. for the pre-race show. at FS1. Radio coverage is on MRN and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio. They'll race a distance of 201 miles over 134 laps. The first two stages are 30 laps each, so the first stage ends on lap 30. The second stage ends on lap 60, and then the final stage is 114 laps, and will end on lap 134. Good to see the truck series back on the track.
Yes, it is, always. And we're going to take a little look at the history of Kansas Speedway when it comes to the Craftsman Truck Series. The 1.5-mile track has hosted, now listen to these numbers carefully, they've hosted 27 races, produced 23 different winners, and 18 different pole winners. That is almost one per race of different. I like that. Now, four truck races have been won from the pole as the first starting position. Most recently, that was done by John Hunter Nemechek in 2022. We'll look at some of the drivers that have etched their names in the Kansas Speedway record books. The race record, Matt Crafton at 139.857 miles per hour back in 2015. The qualifying record also came in 2015, and that was Eric Jones at 179.396 miles per hour. Most races, all 27 of them, by Matt Crafton. Most poles, a name we haven't heard since I think the Hall of Fame, Ron Hornaday Jr. has three. Most wins, somebody's name's popping up here more and more. Kyle Busch is involved in that one we hear a lot, but Matt Crafton also has three, as well as top fives at seven, top tens at 14. The laps led, we go back to Kyle Busch at 277. But laps completed, again, all 27 races he's participated in, Matt Crafton at 4,148.
Okay, now practice is going to begin Saturday, May the 4th at 12:05 p.m. Eastern, and that will be on Fox Sports On, MRN and Sirius XM Radio, followed by the Kometic Gasket Pole Qualifying at 12:35 p.m. Eastern time. So there's a fearsome five that we need to watch for at Kansas Speedway this weekend. Four of those are previous winners. So we'll see what happens this weekend. Matt Crafton, the longtime Truck Series driver, owns a vast majority of the records, as Jay pointed out. The driver of the number 88 Thor Sport Racing Ford finished 11th in the 23 spring race at Kansas. Crafton's most recent win at that track came in the spring of 2020. Christian Eckes is a breakout star behind the wheel of the number 19 McAnally Hilgeman Racing Chevrolet. He's one of only a handful of drivers who have consistently run in the top 10 each week. The only exception being at Atlanta, where he finished 32nd because of a brake failure. Now, in eight starts in Kansas, Eckes has recorded one win. That came in the fall of last year. He has four top fives, six top tens, and the 23-year-old is, of course, the most recent Kansas winner. Grant Infinger, I know that's one of the drivers that Brian is cheering for this weekend. The veteran behind the wheel is number 9, CR7 Chevrolet, has yet to crack the top five this season, but that could all change this weekend at Kansas. In 11 starts at the track, Infinger has captured one win. That was in the spring of last year. He has six top fives, eight top tens, and he's led 132 laps. Another pick for this weekend is Brett Moffitt. He's the longtime NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series standout, and in 2018, the Truck Series champion. He begins his multi-race slate in the Sunflower State this weekend behind the wheel of the number 1 Tricon Garage Toyota. Now, in 7 starts, this 31-year-old has posted one win. That came in the fall of 2020. He has two top fives, four top tens, and he's led 51 laps. Our last driver to feature here is Zane Smith. He's the 2022 Truck Series champion. He returns to the Truck Series this weekend, piloting that number 91 for McAnally Hilgeman Racing's Chevrolet. Now, the NASCAR Cup Series rookie has made 8 starts at Kansas in the Truck Series. He's recorded 1 win that came in the spring of 22. He has 4 top fives, 7 top tens, and Smith has also led 221 laps. He's just 56 laps behind the Kansas Speedway record of 277. From Huntington Beach, California, he finished 3rd in the 2023 spring race at Kansas Speedway. So some drivers to keep your eyes on this weekend racing in the Truck Series.
Yeah, and I might look at maybe some of the race picks we have of changing them up after reading some of this. But one driver looking ahead to Kansas got his eyes on Kansas as he's sitting atop the Truck Series standings, and that is that McAnally Hilgeman Racing Christian Eckes catapulted himself into the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series lead, points lead, following his 4th place finish at Texas Motor Speedway, and then after his 2-week break, will head to Kansas looking to hold on to it. Now, this is just the 3rd time in his career that he's led the point standings. Through 7 races, there's been 4 drivers from 3 organizations that have led the standings: Tyler Ankrum, Ty Majeski, Corey Heim, and now Christian Eckes. Driver that number 19 McAnally Hilgeman Chevrolet, currently 2 points ahead of Tricon Garage's Corey Heim. He's in 2nd. And then 12 points ahead of Thor Sport Racing's Ty Majeski, who's now 3rd. Zeki looks to hold on to that point standings lead at Kansas. The 23-year-old from Middletown, New York, has made 8 starts at Kansas. He's posted 1 win, 4 top fives, and 6 top tens. And he is the most recent winner at Kansas, so that bodes well in his favor.
Now, this next topic is a little bit unexpected, I think. Rhodes, who is the Craftsman Truck Series champion 2 times, is outside of the playoff cut line on the outside looking in. Through 7 races so far this season, 4 drivers have earned their spot, though, in the Craftsman Truck Series playoffs by virtue of wins. And I think we've mentioned these guys, Christian Eckes, Corey Heim, Nick Sanchez, but Raja Karuth is one of those guys as well. That leaves 6 spots still up for grabs as we head into Texas. Now, following Texas, Daniel Dye is ranked 11th in the playoff outlook. He's 5 points back from Grant Enfinger in 10th and the final postseason transfer spot on points. Just behind Dye, though, is the 2-time series champion, Ben Rhodes, who's 6 points back from Enfinger and that postseason cutoff line. So it's a little bit amazing. We mentioned Ty Majeski in 5th. Taylor Gray has that 6th place spot, followed by Tyler Ankrum, who was leading the points in the early part of the year. Matt Crafton in 8th. And Tanner Gray is 9th with Grant Enfinger again in that 10th spot. He's 5 points above the cut line, while Daniel Dye is 5 points below. Other drivers, we mentioned Ben Rhodes, 17 points back. Then it's Stuart Friesen, Bailey Curry, Jake Garcia, Brett Holmes, Chase Purdy, Dean Thompson, Timmy Hill, and Ty Dillon round up the top 20 drivers. 2 drivers just behind there is the rookie, Lane Riggs, and then Mason Massey. So it's interesting to see how this is going to play out. Playoff points, Christian Eckes obviously has the most playoff points with his 2 wins, and the 2 drivers in 2nd and 3rd have the 2nd most at 6. They have just the 1 win and then 1 stage win. So we'll see how this all plays out as the season progresses, Jay.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of, you say it's kind of a shocking that Ben Rhodes is outside. I look at it as the tough competition that we have. And one that caught me off guard there when we looked at it, mentioned Tyler Ankrum leading the points at the beginning of the season. He wasn't getting victories, but he was so solid, looked like he was going to be the one to get the wins and start knocking off the wins. And he's down to seventh now here after seventh races. So that kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah, it is surprising. But like you said, the competition is very stiff in that series. And I think we're going to see more shakeups as the season progresses.
Well, and that includes some drivers adding some races. Connor Zilich is going to add three more races to his Craftsman Truck Series slate, as Spire Motorsports announced that the 17-year-old racing prodigy has added this three additional races to his ambitious 2024 plans. He's now adding Richmond, which will be August 10th, Bristol on September 19th, and Martinsville on November 1st. All totaled, Zilich will compete in five Truck Series races for Spire Motorsports as part of the organization's all-star lineup, which is led by veteran crew chief Brian Patty. And the Mooresville, North Carolina native made his debut for Spire earlier this season at Circuit of the Americas, where he qualified on the pole, subsequently setting a new track record. And despite the early miscue, Zilich was undeterred and raced his way back to a fourth-place finish in his first career Craftsman Truck Series start. And Sharon, I'll let you cover the other one that's going to be making, I believe it's the second start.
Yeah, Cam Waters, all the way from Australia, and one of their most versatile drivers, is going to make his second career start in the Truck Series this weekend, driving that number 66 Thor Sport Racing Ford. Now, Waters made his debut out at Martinsville Speedway 2 weeks ago, and despite his limited practice time and unfamiliarity with the truck's dynamics, he remained optimistic about mastering his new race environment. Now, the 29-year-old ran as high as 11th before his race ended prematurely after being involved in an incident with just 25 laps to go. So he's looking forward to coming back. And he's, to add to the excitement this weekend, it was announced that Australian fans will be able to watch Waters' second career start on KO and Fox Sports. So I'm assuming KO is an Australian station. So all the way from Australia, fans will be able to watch Cam Waters in his second race in the Truck Series event this weekend.
Yeah, I can't add any to that. Either a cable channel or a streaming network is what I would have went with on that KO. It doesn't tell us specifically what it is, but it's great that the Australian fans will get to watch.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that'll be really cool to for them to be able to see their favorite driver. Now, the NASCAR Cup Series is also racing this weekend. They'll be racing the Advent Healthcare 400 at Kansas on Sunday, May the 5th at 3 p.m. Eastern, and that will be televised on Fox Sports 1, along with radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Now, the first, they'll race a distance of 400.5 miles over 267 laps. The first stage will have 80 laps ending on lap 80. The next stage will have 85 laps ending on lap 165. And then the final stage will have 102 laps ending on lap number 267. But there's going to be a clash of the titans has been taking place all season long, and that's probably going to continue at Kansas.
Well, and if you haven't heard this storyline, you haven't been listening to any NASCAR news whatsoever over the season. And that's Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports. The year has been full of compelling storylines, but the one rising to the top is the competitive battle as to which organization is the best in the NASCAR Cup Series this season. And the two teams, Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports, are neck and neck for the honors. Both organizations' drivers and teams have been outstanding and even dominating in some of the statistical categories, And this weekend's showdown at Kansas Speedway, the Advent Health 400, looks to be a good one. For starters, the top four spots in the NASCAR Cup Series standings currently occupied by HMS or JGR drivers. Kyle Larson at the top, then Martin Truex Jr., Chase Elliott, and Denny Hamlin. In fact, Hendrick Motorsports has all four of its drivers inside the top 10 in points after Dover now. William Byron is ranked sixth, and Alex Bowman ninth. Now, Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin, the most recent winner after taking the victory last weekend at Dover Motor Speedway, and ties Hendrick Motorsports' William Byron for the most wins on the season with three each. Through the first 11 races of the season, Hendrick Motorsports with five and Joe Gibbs Racing four have combined to win nine of the 11 events. That's a winning percentage of 81.8%. The other two organizations with wins would be Trackhouse Racing, who is Daniel Suarez at Atlanta, and then 2311 Racing at Talladega with Tyler Reddick. Now, in total, five of the seven race winners this season being from either HMS or Joe Gibbs Racing. Mentioned Byron with his three wins. Kyle Larson has one, and Chase Elliott has one. For Joe Gibbs Racing, the other one with a win besides Denny Hamlin's three is Christopher Bell. Through those 11 races this season, 55 top five finishing positions were up for grabs. HMS had 17 of them, while Joe Gibbs had 12, which accounts for 29 of the total, and that's a 52.7%. Also, through those 11 races, it's 110 then top 10 finishes for the taking. Hendrick Motorsports, 23, Joe Gibbs, 21. That accounts for 44 of them, or 40%. Plus, not only have those two organizations finished well, but their drivers have been out front leading laps 66% of the time this season. Of the 3,293 laps run, Joe Gibbs Racing actually leads this category at 1,293, which is 39%. And then HMS have led 892, which is 27%. When it comes to the weekend at Kansas Speedway, we expect the Titans of the Cup Series to clash once again and continue that battle, as they are tied for the series' most wins at the 1.5-mile track, each having eight victories. We'll start with Hendrick Motorsports. Going back, Jeff Gordon has three in 2001, 2, and 14. Jimmy Johnson has three in 2008, 11, and 15. Chase Elliott won with the playoff win in 2018. And then Kyle Larson with his one in the playoffs of 2021. Look at Joe Gibbs Racing. Again, got to go back through history here. We got Tony Stewart in 2006, Denny Hamlin in 12, 19, 2020, and 23, Matt Kenseth in 2013, and then Kyle Busch with a pair in 2016 and 21. Some other organizations, the next organization behind those two teams with their eight, Team Penske has six, RFK Racing has four, 2311 has three, and that's important because they got three of the last four. Stuart Haas Racing has three. And then Furniture Row has a pair. They swept in 2017. Richard Childress Racing and MB2 Motorsports each have one. So that's really setting some things up there at Kansas Speedway.
All right. Now, Kansas Speedway is going to set the stage for the NASCAR Cup Series. The Heartland of America groundbreaking Kansas Speedway held on May 25th of 1999. That was the official opening of Kansas Speedway that came in 2021, with the first Cup Series race being held on September 30th of that year. The first Cup event was won by Hendrick Motorsports driver and NASCAR Hall of Famer Jeff Gordon and a Chevrolet. Gordon would actually win the first two Cup Series races held in Kansas. He won there in the following year as well in 2002. Now, during the 2012 season, between April and October events, the Kansas Speedway track underwent a repave, adding a variable banking in the corners, bringing them to 17 to 20 degrees. Now, the advancement has opened up racing lanes from the apron to the wall and has become a driver favorite. In total, there's been 36 Cup Series races at Kansas Speedway, one event from 2001 to 2010, and then two races every year since 2011. The 36 Cup Series races have produced 19 different pole winners and 19 different race winners from the first year of 2001 to last year of 2023. So, a little bit of stats there on the history of Kansas Speedway.
Missed a line there. In total, there's been 36 NASCAR Cup Series races at Kansas Speedway. I'm sorry, disregard that. Looking at the next section, important hot ticket is starting up front at Kansas. When we look at the track history, a total of 18 different starting positions on the grid have led to victories in the Cup Series, with that first starting position being the most proficient starting spot, though, in the field, producing more winners, seven, than any other starting position on the grid. The winning percentage equals out to a 19.44%. Seven different drivers have won a Cup Series race from the pole or first starting position at Kansas. And goes back to 2004, Joe Nemechek, Jimmy Johnson in 08, Matt Kenseth in the spring of 2013, Kevin Harvick in the playoffs of 2013, Martin Truex Jr. was the playoff winner in 2017, then Kevin Harvick in the spring of 2018, and Kyle Larson in that fall playoff race of 2021. Well, Kevin Harvick leads the NASCAR Cup Series in poles at Kansas Speedway with five, the fall of 2013, a sweep in 14, the spring of 18, and then again the spring of 19. As NASCAR Hall of Famer Jimmy Johnson, he'll be making his fourth start of the season this weekend at Kansas as he leads all active drivers in poles with three, 2003, 7, and 8. Now, nine of those 19 Cup Series pole winners are active this weekend. Mentioned Jimmy Johnson with his three. Christopher Bell has a pair in 2023 and 22. Joey Logano, 18 and 15. Martin Truex Jr. in 2017 and 16. Then you got William Byron in 2023. 22 was Tyler Reddick. Go back to 2019, it was Daniel Hemric. Unless Benny Lynn is with RCR. Ryan Blaney in 2017. And Brad Keselowski also has one in 2015. And to keep up to date with that, the Cup Series on-track activity at Kansas is scheduled to begin on Saturday, May 4th. That'll be with practice and Busch Light pole qualifying from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Both events will be televised on FS1 and then covered on MRN and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio.
Okay, we've been talking a lot about Denny Hamlin lately. He's the chief of Kansas Speedway. From Joe Gibbs Racing, he's coming off of his third win of the season last weekend at Dover. He ties William Byron again with the most victories of the year. And at 43 years old, he heads to Kansas Speedway, not only as the defending winner of Sunday's race, but he also leads the series in wins at Kansas as well, with his four victories. I think Jay mentioned those in 2012, 19, 20, and 23. 19 different drivers have led the pack to the checkered flag at Kansas in the Cup Series, and 10 of those Cup Series winners are active this weekend. Denny Hamlin, of course, with his four wins. Two drivers have three wins. That's Joey Logano winning in 2020, 15, and 14. Jimmy Johnson has three wins, win in 2008, 11, and 15. And then two drivers with two wins are Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski. Kyle Busch got his wins in 2021 and 2016. Brad Keselowski got his wins in 2011 and 2019. Another driver with two wins is Martin Truex Jr., he got his wins with the 2017 sweep. Now, four drivers have one win at Kansas. Going back to 2018, it was Chase Elliott, then Kyle Larson in 21. Bubba Wallace won there in 22. And then it was Tyler Reddick in 2023. Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin, as we mentioned, is the defending winner of the race. And 2311 Racing's Tyler Reddick, the organization Hamlin co-owns with the NBA legend Michael Jordan, won the playoff race at Kansas just last September. We've kind of gone over this next information, so I'm not going to repeat it, but definitely looking forward to seeing who wins this weekend out at Kansas Speedway.
Well, as you heard throughout all those stats, it's Toyota that's looking to return to Kansas to keep their winning streak alive. Over the last two seasons, Toyota has swept the races at Kansas Speedway in the NASCAR Cup Series races, and now they return to the 1.5-mile track, riding the longest OEM winning streak in the track's history, with the intentions of keeping it alive. Last season, it was Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin that won this race, and then 2311 Racing's Tyler Reddick, who won the playoff race in September. Back in 2022, it was 23 Racing's drivers Kurt Busch in the May race and Bubba Wallace in the September race that swept the NASCAR Cup Series races at Kansas Speedway. So three of those four are actually in the same car, the number 45 for 2311. That's always amazing.
Yep.
In total, four manufacturers have won at Kansas Speedway in the Cup Series. It's led by Chevrolet with 13 victories. Toyota now, though, has 12 wins right on their heels. Ford picked up 9, and Dodge has 2. And Toyota can tie the Chevrolet for series most with a win at Kansas with a victory this weekend. I wasn't trying to be predicting. I know you said something about a crystal ball, but the odds are in their favor.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's take a look at the playoff outlook here in the Cup Series. Former Kansas winner Bubba Wallace is the first driver outside that playoff cut line. One driver hoping that Kansas Speedway could right his 24-season ship is 2311 Racing's Bubba Wallace. The Mobile, Alabama native is coming off back-to-back DNFs, and the former Kansas winner back in 22 is hoping this weekend could be a challenge in his fortune. So Wallace dropped 4 in the point standings after Dover. He's now 17th in the playoff outlook, and he's 2 points behind Chris Buescher, who sits in 16th. 16th is the final transfer spot in on points. So just behind Wallace is the 2012 NASCAR Cup Series champion, Brad Keselowski, in 18th. He's 4 points back from his RFK Racing teammate, Chris Buescher, who's on the inside of that cut line. So just to kind of review this, the drivers that are in on wins so far include Denny Hamlin, William Byron, Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Tyler Reddick, Christopher Bell, and Daniel Suarez. All of those drivers do have victories. In on points is Martin Truex. He's these drivers don't have wins yet, but they're inside the cut line. That's Martin Truex Jr., Ryan Blaney, Ty Gibbs, Alex Bowman, Ross Chastain, Kyle Busch, Chase Briscoe, Joey Logano, and as we mentioned earlier, Chris Buescher is on the top of that cut line. And as we also mentioned, Bubba Wallace is just 2 points back, and as well as Brad Keselowski, who is 4 points back from that cut line. Then in 19th place is Austin Cindric. Carson Hocevar is the highest rookie in 20th. And then 6 drivers behind that 20th place spot are Noah Gragson, John Hunter Nemechek, Eric Jones, Josh Berry, Daniel Hemric, and Todd Gilliland. Now, anybody can get a win and put themselves on top of that cut line. So we'll have to keep an eye on that as the season progresses. Because this goes all the way down to 34th place, which is Zane Smith, another one of the rookies. Josh Berry, as I mentioned, is in that 24th place, another rookie. But anybody, if they get a win, they can be in the playoffs this season. So we'll see if anybody that far back can come up with a win to put themselves in.
And wouldn't that make some things interesting?
Yes, it would.
Well, when we talk about grand marshals, a lot of time we talk about celebrities. This one is a celebrity when you're talking about NASCAR for sure, but Richard Petty is going to serve as the grand marshal for Sunday's Advent Health 400. Now, they announced that this weekend that legendary NASCAR Hall of Famer, seven-time NASCAR Cup Series champion, and Legacy Motor Club team ambassador, Richard Petty will serve as the grand marshal for this Sunday's race at Kansas Speedway. In celebration of the Petty family's 75th year in NASCAR, the King will say those most famous words in motorsports ahead of one of the most competitive events of the year. And Petty's legendary 35-year career continues to serve as the benchmark for greatness throughout all motorsports. As the most successful driver in NASCAR history, the Level Cross North Carolina native has garnered the most wins at 200, most poles at 123, most wins in a season at 27, most Daytona 500 wins at 7, most consecutive wins at 10, most starts 1,185, and then tied for the most championships along with Dale Earnhardt and Jimmy Johnson at 7. Now, these astounding accomplishments led Petty to be inducted into the inaugural class of the NASCAR Hall of Fame in 2010 and named as one of NASCAR's 75 greatest drivers. Additionally, he's been elected to the National Motorsports Press Association Hall of Fame, International Motorsports Hall of Fame, the North Carolina Auto Racing Hall of Fame, and the North Carolina Athletic Hall of Fame, and then serves as the chairman of that North Carolina Motorsports Association. A team leadership for Legacy Motor Club, they'll be well represented in Sunday's Advent Health 400, with both Petty serving as the grand marshal, and then along with co-owner Jimmy Johnson driving that number 84 Advent Health Toyota Camry XSE. Now, the King giving the command to start engines, that'll be one of many exciting features in this weekend's Advent Health 400 weekend at Kansas Speedway. It also includes the power-packed Saturday doubleheader featuring the ARCA Menard Series and the NASCAR Craftsman Chuck Series, following that up by Sunday's Cup Series race.
A lot to look forward to there. Talking about drivers that are doing good things, Keselowski's Checkered Flag Foundation partners with RFK and Solomon Plumbing to honor the military. So Keselowski's Checkered Flag Foundation announced this week a return of their Tribute to Veterans program, this year presented by Solomon Plumbing. For the sixth consecutive year and third with RFK Racing, the program will honor America's heroes with a special scheme on the number 6 Solomon Plumbing Ford Mustang, piloted by NASCAR champion Brad Keselowski. Now, starting May 1st of this year, friends and family can submit a hero's name to be featured on the number 6 Solomon Plumbing Ford Mustang that Keselowski will drive during the Cup Series race at Darlington Raceway in Darlington, South Carolina, on September the 1st of this year. Now, the Tribute to the Veterans program gives friends and family the opportunity to honor and recognize their heroes, including veterans, active military, military family members, and their caregivers, acknowledging the ongoing commitment to the well-being of veterans and those who play a role in veterans' daily lives. Now, the cost is $100 per submission to be a part of the campaign, with proceeds benefiting the Checkered Flag Foundation in its mission to honor and assist those who have sacrificed greatly for our country and our communities. In addition to having your hero's name on the car, each submission will receive a personalized certificate and commemorative gift following the September 1st Darlington Race weekend. Those wishing to submit a veteran service member or family member can do so at the website, and I'm going to give you that in just a minute. And submissions will be accepted through July 19th of this year. Now, URL for that submission is checkeredflag.org/store/p130/tribute-to-veterans.html#. So I know that sounds like a lot, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to post that up on my Twitter feed so that fans can see where they can submit their veteran's name and contribute $100 to the Checkered Flag Foundation for Brad Keselowski. So it really is a good cause, and Brad Keselowski is certainly to be commended for everything he does for the veterans.
Most certainly. That's a great program they got there. And I know going off of the Jayski's news and notes that are up, there is a hyperlink there under that. That's why Sharon had to look it up, because we're looking at just the, where it says the link. It doesn't have it laid out there. But you can click on it there, and I believe there is another article, and I don't know where it is, though. But if you find the article on Brad Keselowski's foundation, you can find it on there as well. Now, some stats to watch. We've got some upcoming driver milestones in the NASCAR Cup Series, possible milestones that can be achieved this Sunday over the next few weeks in the NASCAR Cup Series. When we're looking at starts, Ross Chastain looking to make his 200th start in the Cup Series. That'll be at Darlington. At Charlotte Motor Speedway, Chase Elliott, tried to combine two here, Chase Elliott, he'll be making his 300th NASCAR Cup Series start. And Corey LaJoie will be making his 250th. Wins. Denny Hamlin currently has 54 NASCAR Cup Series wins. If he were to win another race, he would tie NASCAR Hall of Famer Rusty Wallace for 11th on the all-time wins list at 55. Right now, I believe he's tied with Lee Petty. Now, Martin Truex Jr., he's currently sitting at 34 NASCAR Cup Series wins. If he were to win, I don't like the use of the word if, I'd say win, but that's just me. If he were to win another race, he would tie Brad Keselowski for 24th on the all-time win list with 35 victories each. So Brad Keselowski should also be there as far as that. But Joey Logano currently has 32 wins. If he were to win another race, he would tie NASCAR Hall of Famer Fireball Roberts for 27th on the all-times list, moving up to 33. And Kyle Larson already climbing the charts. He currently has 24. If he were to win another race, he would tie Jim Paschel and Joe Weatherly for 34th on the all-times list as they hit 25 each. Now, laps led, four drivers that could reach milestones in laps led. That would obviously be this weekend at Kansas Speedway and the Cup Series. Jimmy Johnson, career laps led, 18,941. The milestone to hit would be 19,000, which means he needs 59 more. Denny Hamlin is at 14,887, looking for 113 more to hit 15,000. Ryan Blaney is just 175 short of 4,000 at 3,825. And William Byron looking to hit 3,000. He's 194 short at 2806. Now, if Johnson were to hit 19,000 laps led, he'd become just the 10th driver all time to accomplish that feat. And if Hamlin hits 15,000, he would become the 12th driver all time to accomplish the feat. But I will say this, I know NASCAR on Fox has been doing this. It's not just about the drivers. It's about crew members as well.
Yes, indeed. And I'm going to give you some spotlight on some of those crew members right now. And this week at Kansas Speedway, we're going to highlight several of the crew members, team's crew members that are from surrounding areas around the track in Kansas and Missouri. So from Kansas, there's Ben Weber. He's the front racing Chevrolet team, and he is from Hanston, Kansas. From Missouri, we've got three people, three crew members that are from Missouri. I'm going to start with TJ Semke. He's the jackman for the number 9 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet team. And prior to working in NASCAR, Semke attended the University of Kansas where he played football. He is from Lee's Summit, Missouri. And also, Chris Hall, he's the director of pit crew operations for the Legacy Motor Club team. Hall is from Springfield, Missouri. He attended Fordland High School. And John Phillips is the engine tuner for the number 14 Stuart Haas Racing Ford team. And before he worked in NASCAR, Phillips worked in NHRA drag racing. Phillips is from Jefferson City, Missouri, and he attended Jefferson City High School. I've always said my trip down to Texas is my NASCAR memory lane, if you will, because I go through Norman, Oklahoma. I go through Emporia, Kansas. Well, now I've got some other places that I go through to honor some of the pit crew members here, Springfield, Missouri, and Jefferson City, Missouri. So that just adds to the nostalgia of that trip.
Well, mine, when you talk about Jefferson City, Missouri, that's if you miss your turn trying to go over to St. Louis to come south. So I also have been there. It was not my intent trying to go somewhere else. I just missed my turn and had to turn around there in Jefferson City.
Okay. Well, it still makes it memorable. Now, I'm going to go and do something that Brian and I have been doing, and I know you don't have the DraftKings odds, Jay, but what I've been doing is going to our Fantasy Central and letting folks know what the driver ratings are of some of the drivers that are racing this weekend, as well as what their average finishing position is at the tracks. I'm going to start with the Craftsman Truck Series because there's several drivers here. And I keep saying I'm going to get a ruler so I can keep track of this. There's several drivers here, starting with Christian Eckes, who have a driver rating over 103. And two of those drivers are at the 103 mark. Christian Eckes is exactly 103 for his driver rating, but just above him at 103.6 is Grant Enfinger. The difference between those two drivers, though, is their average finish. Christian Eckes' average finish at Kansas comes in at 11.5, while Grant Enfinger has a 6.5 average finish. It's not the best, but it's one of the best at that track. Kyle Busch is next up the line here. His average finish is tied with Nick Sanchez at 7.0. Kyle Busch has a driver rating at 105.4, and it's hard to believe, but Nick Sanchez exceeds that at 111.7. So that's kind of interesting to note. And then there's two drivers, both of them very good in the Craftsman Truck Series. Corey Heim is second on the list. He's got a driver rating at 112.3. His average finish at the track, though, is at 6.3, just a couple of notches difference from Nick Sanchez at 6.1. But the driver with the best average finish at Kansas Speedway is the former champion, and that is Zane Smith. Zane Smith has an average finish at 3.3 and a driver rating in four races of 125.3. So he could be a pretty good pick for this weekend out of Kansas. Now, there are some drivers who have good average finishes but don't have the 100 or more driver rating. I'm going to mention those drivers, Taylor Gray at 5.5 and Jake Garcia at 9.5. Ross Chastain has a driver rate, average finish at that track to look at this weekend as well. So some interesting stats there for the truck series. What are your thoughts, Jay?
Yeah, it makes me try to overthink, I guess, my fantasy picks there. I think, again, it's great. It talks about the competition, how tough it can be. And then you throw in that factor of, we talked about, especially in the truck series, of first-time winners and how many different winners they've had. So you got to look at that as well, of if that streak continues, you're taking away from some of those names you listed as the best there of who could come out of nowhere and get that first victory.
Exactly. I'm going to take a look here at the Cup Series real quick, too, because we have about five drivers that have a driver rating over 100 there. I'm going to start with Christopher Bell. His driver rating is at 101.8, but his average finish at the track is at 13.0. Same situation with Tyler Reddick, but you know, it's one of those situations where you do really, really well or not so well. His driver rating is actually tied with Bubba Wallace at 104.1. Tyler Reddick's average finish at that track, though, is 18.8, while Bubba Wallace is at 11.8. Then you've got Kyle Larson. His average driver rating is 112.6. But his average finish at that track is at a 4.0. And number one on the list is probably no surprise to anybody, is Denny Hamlin with a driver rating at 114. But his average finish at that track is 2.3. That's pretty amazing. Now, some other drivers who have a box score less than 100 but have pretty good average finishing position, Alex Bowman at 7.8. Ross Chastain comes in at 8.0. So something to look at as far as your fantasy pick for this weekend. Any thoughts there, Jay?
Well, just going by based off the average finish, you talked about Denny Hamlin having a 2-point-something. I mean, who do you pick that has an average finish of first? Because that's the only one that's ahead of him in that case. So Denny Hamlin, definitely one you got to look at. I know some fans listening on SiriusXM are kind of tired of hearing about HMS and Joe Gibbs Racing, William Byron and Denny Hamlin, but that's who's been winning and running up front and battling. I know Kyle Larson is the one that mixed it up with him this last weekend, but on the season, I mean, that is what the storyline is. As we get into hot topics here, we'll talk about whether or not Ford can mix it up with that. Their storyline, unfortunately, has been on the other end.
It's true. It has been at the other end. And like I say, we are coming up on NASCAR Hot Topics, so that's a good bridge, if you will, from our preview part of the show over to our Hot Topic sound-off segment of the show. I don't think we have anybody joining us today. I know Andy said he had to work. I know Brian's on his way to Kansas Speedway. And Tommy Kraft, I know, has to work as well. So I think it's just going to be you and I, Jay. So I guess I'll ask you, where do you want to start with our Hot Topic sound-off for today?
Well, we were talking about it, and I know I mentioned it earlier, having the crystal ball. You had put it up. We've talked about it of Ford having yet to win this season. So will they get a – let's see, what was your question? Will they get a win before the halfway mark of the regular season at Darlington? The new second half of the season starts at the Coca-Cola 600. So who is it and where will it be? Where it'll be, it'd be tough to say. We talked about this in several different aspects. They are still struggling a little bit to get their hands around the dark horse Mustang, but over the past several weeks, we have certainly seen better performances from several different teams. Overall, throughout the year, I'd say Ryan Blaney from Team Penske has still kind of led the charge. If I had to pick one to get their first win, I would have to say it would be him. But Brad Keselowski, RFK Racing, has shown some great speed. And then ones right behind him. We talked about Noah Gregson, but also Todd Dillon and Michael McDowell from Front Row Motorsports. Michael McDowell actually came really close to almost winning at Talladega, as did Brad Keselowski. So they still have their speed when it comes to speedway-style racing tracks. Kansas not looking good for them this weekend. I'll just be blunt about that. We talked about it for an hour and a half here. Toyota and Chevrolet, Toyota even more so as of recent, have really controlled Kansas Speedway. So I think it's going to be really tough. But take away looking at the win, let's look at how they run and where they finish. You know, because, again, it comes in steps. You don't just flip the switch and you go from 20th to 1st. Not that they're that far back either, but so that's what I think you got to look at. We've seen the progression. They are progressing to these teams getting better and better week out. The last one I want to hit on as a whole, Noah Gregson coming from Stuart Haas Racing. We've seen Chase Briscoe also move up the standings in points because he's running, fill in the blank, Sharon, he is running blank week to week.
Yeah. I am looking at the point standings. Noah Gregson made a six position movement up with his finish at Dover last weekend. Also moving up that ladder was Kyle Busch. Of course, Kyle Busch is in a Chevrolet. But some other drivers in Fords that did move up. In addition to Denny Hamlin, you've got Joey Logano moved up two spots. Chris Buescher moved up two spots. And Noah Gregson, I mentioned earlier, moved up six spots. With the exception of Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, all of those drivers that moved up in points were Ford drivers. So that, to me, is an indication that the Fords are starting to turn that ship around. Noah Gregson kind of leading that charge with his six spots up with his finish out at Dover. So I think it's going to happen. They are moving in the right direction. As far as being in the playoffs or out of the playoffs, right now you've got Chase Briscoe, who sits at 12th. The top-performing Ford, though, is actually Ryan Blaney. He's seventh in the series point standings. Then you've got Chase Briscoe in 12th, Joey Logano 13th, and Chris Buescher sits in 14th. Brad Keselowski is right there on the line, but you've got a couple of drivers, I think, that have wins. Christopher Bell right now, even though he's got a win, is below the cut line, as is Daniel Suarez. So those two drivers actually displace Bubba Wallace and Brad Keselowski. So that puts Bubba Wallace and Brad Keselowski below that cut line with those other two drivers having those wins. So it's really, I think they're moving in the right direction. I would have to say maybe Ryan Blaney might be the first driver in a Ford to get that victory, just based on the consistency of his performance so far this year and the fact that he's seventh in the series point standings. But I might have to second guess that when you think about what Noah Gregson's been able to do the last couple of races as well.
Well, you know me, and I'm a fan of Noah Gregson, and they certainly have been. I think when you look at it statistically over the past month or so, I believe Noah Gregson is maybe right there with Ryan Blaney as far as most points gained. But going back to the beginning of the season and a rough start, Brad Keselowski at one point was somewhere below 30th as far as points. And you mentioned right now he is right at the line, so has made that move. And again, yes, they are not getting the wins. Okay, but look at where they are running and finishing. You know, right now when we're talking about wins and up front all the time, it is HMS and JGR, but take a little bit deeper look at it, you're starting to see that mixture of Fords right there with them anyway. And just kind of looking through the schedule, I know we got Darlington, then the All-Star race, which wouldn't count as a points win at North Wilkesboro, but Charlotte, the 2.5 miles, and then Darlington of whatever it is, 1.3 egg-shaped, whatever. I don't know if the 1.5 mile tracks is where you're going to see Ford break out, because Toyota and Chevy have such a lock on that. But then you come to Worldwide Technology, a short track, Sonoma, a road course, Iowa, another short track. When we talk about the wear, and then also New Hampshire and Nashville, I think that stretch right there is where you may see Ford get the victory when it comes to either a road course or a short track. And that's just because, like I said, that may be where they're lacking a little bit as far as outright speed, but with some of the drivers they have being good as far as short track racing or road course racers. So it may not be for the next, what is Charlotte, you said, is May something. Might not see it till June, which, again, is a concern, but I don't think you have to hit the panic button yet. Look at last year, Ryan Blaney as your defending champion. Really didn't emerge as a play or a championship contender until midway into the playoffs. So, there's concern, but I don't know that you got to necessarily hit the panic button, because it is how you finish, not necessarily how you start.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is hard to pick out which track might be the track where we see a Ford their breakout win, but you brought up some good ones. I will say the first half of the season ends at Darlington. Then we've got the All-Star race that's in between there, kind of marking that midpoint of the season. The second half of this regular season starts at Charlotte Motor Speedway, with that Coca-Cola 600. Then you've got Worldwide Technology Raceway, Sonoma Raceway, and actually Iowa Speedway, which I'm super excited about this year on June 16th, marks the 10-race countdown to the playoffs. For some reason, I've got the hiccups here, so I apologize for that. So Iowa Speedway is going to play a significant role. That starts race number 10 before the playoffs begin. Then we go to New Hampshire, Nashville, the Chicago Street Race, Pocono, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, back to the Brickyard 400. Then we've got the Richmond, Michigan, Daytona, and it ends at Darlington Raceway on September the 1st. The playoffs begin on September the 8th at Atlanta Motor Speedway. So, gosh, it's going to be fun to watch and see just where Ford makes their breakout victory. I hope it happens this year. I know they struggled last year as well, but I do think that we are seeing some signs of them turning around, and we will see somebody who drives the Ford, the blue oval on their car, in victory lane before the season is out. I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. I can't see them going 2 years in a row without a victory.
Well, and if you think about it real quick, we may not even be talking about this. We're for a tenth of a second. Granted, it was at a style of track in the super speedway, but I said that's always been Ford's strong suit. Go back to Atlanta. You mentioned that being the first race of the playoffs. Daniel Suarez getting his victory there. It was a 3-wide photo finish that included the 12 Ford of Ryan Blaney. Mentioned Talladega. The top running three cars were Fords until an incident happened, kind of like with Toyotas. If you got all the Fords lined up and one of them makes a mistake, it takes out all of them. You had Michael McDowell in a Ford, Brad Keselowski, who ended up second or third, and Noah Gregson. So, again, a tenth of a second, a little bit different decision-making, and we wouldn't be talking about them not having a win. We'd probably be talking about them only getting wins on super speedways, but like I said, of that they aren't like way out to lunch, I'll say that. They're just not eating at the main table yet.
Yet is the key word there. I think that it will come. Okay. And you bring up a good point. They've been really good in fast cars in Atlanta, Talladega, Daytona. Those are all opportunities for Ford to get that breakthrough win. So Michael McDowell came close. I wouldn't count him out as a possibility there either. So what's our next topic going to be?
Well, you said that speaking of things to come, there's been a lot of talk about a new charter agreement. One side, NASCAR, saying that, you know, it's being worked on. It's not signed yet, but they're working towards it, and it's close. However, some of the team owners are saying, no, we don't agree. We're not ready to sign anything yet until we get what we want. And I know you tied several articles or posts we had here. I know MJ, Michael Jordan had one. Denny Hamlin had one. You added one from Jeff Gluck and Jordan Bianchi. This charter system has been a big story. We kind of figured it would work itself out, but now it's starting to sound like maybe there's more struggle and strain there than what we thought. And Michael Jordan's and Denny Hamlin's kind of caught me off guard. Jordan's was that NASCAR will die. Denny Hamlin talked about drivers skipping races.
I think the sticking point, a lot of us thought the sticking point had to do with the broadcast rights, but that's all I think been worked out. Now the sticking point appears to be on whether or not charters should be made permanent without an expiration date. Right now the expiration date is December 31st of this year, and so that's why this is a hot topic, because it is something that's got to be negotiated. Compromises will likely have to be made if we're going to move forward after that December 31st of this year. So Jimmy Johnson kind of put it in terms of everybody is posturing right now. We're in the eighth or the ninth inning of this thing, and it's not time to panic yet. But I think the frustrations are starting to build, especially on the team owner side of this. The article that was written by Jordan Bianchi and Jeff Gluck was a really interesting article. He pointed out several interesting points there. And again, the sticking point seems to be on whether or not NASCAR is going to be willing. Right now they're saying it's a non-starter, but whether or not they can compromise on this or not, of the permanency of the charter system, and that they are looking for this to be on the level of the franchises in other sports. And one point that was brought up is that, you know, you've got NASCAR representing themselves, and you've got, I think, Steve O'Donnell is kind of in the middle of this thing trying to negotiate on behalf of NASCAR with the team owners. But what's happened is that NASCAR is no longer communicating with the Race Team Alliance. There's a new group that they put together, MTC, I think is what they're called, the NASCAR Team Cooperative or something along those lines, that is also out there trying to negotiate with NASCAR. But what NASCAR has started to do is they're meeting with teams individually and coming to agreements with those individual teams. Now, keep in mind, there's also a divide here between those teams that feel like they're in a position that they need to accept what NASCAR's terms are, and they're kind of being silent right now. And then you've got the bigger teams that are out there that are saying, hold the horses here. We are going to hold fast on these points because we think this is important. Now, a lot of these teams are saying that they're losing money, but what was pointed out in Jordan Bianchi and Jeff Gluck's article is that you've got teams like Hendrick Motorsports that are buying up some of the stock parts. There's a one vendor source for a lot of the parts, and what Hendrick Motorsports is doing is they're buying up all these parts, and they're looking for the best of those parts to put into their cars. A smaller organization is not going to be able to do that. They have to deal with whatever parts they're getting from the single source supplier. So they're talking about losing money. I think from my perspective, I know they're looking for the competitive advantage, and that's why they're buying up all these parts and looking for the best of the best to use in their cars. But I think that is self-defeating of the purpose of the next-gen car, which is to level the playing field. This is an example of teams not leveling the playing field, and those teams with the most money are using that to their competitive advantage, and they're saying that they're losing money, but they're using that money to give themselves a competitive advantage over the other teams. And that's something that I think needs to be taken into consideration. I'm not opposed to them looking for a more permanency here, but I think that there is definitely posturing taking place. And when you've got the biggest teams in NASCAR saying that they're losing money, I'm not doubting that they're losing money, but I think they have to take a look at themselves and how they're spending the money and whether or not NASCAR is the reason that they're losing money. I think that there could be other reasons for why that money is being lost. So I think that there's always more to the story, and that's just one example that I picked up on that indicates to me that there's more to the story than the posturing that is taking place by some of these teams. I'm not discounting their points that they're trying to make. I will say one of the other factors that was brought out in the article on The Athletic is that Jim France is pretty silent. You don't see Jim France coming out and doing press conferences and that kind of thing, but he's carrying on his family's tradition. And one of his goals in doing that is to carry on the sport in the same manner that his father and his brother have done in the past. And I'm referring to Bill France Sr., Bill France Jr., and Brian France. Jim France is trying to manage this organization in the same vein, which is it's our way or no way, and he's holding hard and fast on some of the points that are being brought up here. I don't know that that's going to be in the best interest when it comes to negotiating with regard to the charter agreements. I do think that rather than having a NASCAR person being the point person, I guess, if you will, with working with the teams in the form of Steve O'Donnell, I think there needs to be an independent person that mediates the conversation between the Race Team Alliance, the NTC, and the teams and NASCAR's side of this. They need to bring in somebody who is working on behalf of the teams as well as NASCAR to come to a compromise in this situation, because what I'm hearing is that you've got two sides that are not wanting to compromise on certain points, and you need a professional person in that role in between that's going to find those common threads and bring those two sides together for compromise. And NASCAR doing it on their behalf is not really the right way to go here. I think they need to bring in a mediator in order to negotiate those compromises. That's just my thoughts on it so far. What are your thoughts, Jay?
I don't even know where to begin or how much time we have left to record the rest of this show. I'll go back to I was never particularly a fan of 35 in points being locked into races. I know they made modifications to that where that would change from the beginning of the season, go to the next or first five races or whatever. That's kind of where the charter system emerged from. on paper and theoretically for the teams, the charter system was a good idea. It gave them that, what do you call it, tangible value for what they were doing. Before, if a team ended up pulling out a NASCAR, they'd sell off their equipment, race shop, whatever, for pennies on the dollar, as they say. I'm in favor of that. I understand that from the drivers and teams side of it. However, what does that do to new teams coming in? You're looking at $40 million. Dale Earnhardt Jr. being one of them says, I can't invest that just to get that charter. So I think that kind of, I want to say I told you so, but that's one of those things of it kind of led us down this road to the point where we're at. When it comes to this agreement, I know the initial holdup was you mentioned the television TV deal rights. That has been established as far as what the total pie is. Now it's a matter of what percentage and who gets what out of that pot. And it comes down to NASCAR as the sanctioning body, the tracks, and the team owners. Again, do I think there's some flexibility and some negotiation that can be done there to adjust that? Possibly. I don't know the numbers. NASCAR has never come out and said, hey, we're losing money too, yada, yada, yada. But I think there could be some discussions to be had there. Next thing is, like I said, I don't even know. Oh, Sharon, I had to disagree with you. I am absolutely not in favor of permanency where it's a guaranteed for life type deal. You know, they've paired it up to the best of my knowledge. A lot of this is, again, is limited knowledge, what you read, and sometimes it depends on whose article you're reading or what you're reading of who it favors, depending on the writer's perspective. So, but from my knowledge, they've paired it up in seven-year deals to match up with the TV rights deal. So I think that's a good way to go. The possibility, I will say this, the possibility of some permanent ones, it would have to take something, a very big commitment, and I'll start with your top teams. Hendrick Motorsports, championship contending team every year. Maybe give them one or two permanent ones. Joe Gibbs Racing, maybe give them one or two permanent. Richard Childress, I'd have to. Okay, so I'm saying it would have to be pretty limited, and you would have to justify that you have been here long-term and have every intention of being here long-term into the future. You know, let's take HMS. Jeff Gordon has taken over that role as a leadership of that organization with Rick Hendrick. Team Penske would be another one. You know, we've seen that organization has every intention of continuing on down the road. So, like I said, that would have to be a really prove you're worthy of a permanent one. The going into what Michael Jordan and Denny Hamlin, and you kind of talked about this, and that's where it ties into me of the opinion out there that NASCAR is taking that my way or the highway. I don't know that we're seeing that as hard of stance as we saw back from Bill France and Bill France Jr. I'm not saying it's not there still there to a certain degree from, as you mentioned, Jim France, but I think the media has kind of made it out to be, and somebody feeding the media information, and I'm just going to put it on the media, that that's their stance. I don't know that we've seen that. We have seen that change over many different levels and aspects in NASCAR, that mentality has softened. I'll just say that. And that comes from the fans, the drivers. However, when it comes down to it of Denny Hamlin saying, well, we're going to skip races, Michael Jordan saying, if you don't do it our way, you're going to die. And NASCAR has survived for 49, tried to do some 75. We're in the 75 years, right? 75 or 6 years.
Well, more than that, because they started in 1948.
48, there we go. That's what I was trying to do. So, yeah, that is 76 or 77 then. Yeah, I think last year or the year before is when they did their 75th.
Right.
So my point being, they have gone through some things. They survived COVID. They've survived the loss of Dale Earnhardt. They survived the loss of drivers such as Richard Petty. You know, this sport is going to continue. No driver or team is bigger than the sport. And I feel I know it seems like, again, kind of lean towards that negativity towards Denny Hamlin, but I feel like he's all of a sudden stepping in and saying, hey, I'm more important than this organization. And you're not going to win with that kind of attitude either. So I didn't like that, because I guarantee you, if he's skipping a race and that opens up a spot where a charter team isn't even there, there are teams that will step in and race. It may go through a stage of there's more starting parks like we used to see, but there are teams that will step up then and show up with a car to fill a spot if it's a guaranteed spot. Michael Jordan talking about NASCAR needs to change their business model or they're not going to survive. Let's look at that. NASCAR does not have one title sponsor anymore. They've accepted and worked with the official partners of. So the charter system has only been in existence for a few years. I say a few, maybe as many as 10. I don't remember when it started. That's new. They have changed their business models. You were alluding to it. Some of these teams need to change their own business models. And I heard about this on SiriusXM radio earlier this week, I believe. You were talking about the parts suppliers, teams buying them up. I think it was Larry McReynolds that was talking about it when he detailed it to try and do a rundown, taking hoods that cost $3,000. You have to buy from the single source supplier, okay? Teams, rather than spending $3,000 and getting seven hoods because they can have seven cars per team, instead of just buying one for a car, they're buying 10, running them through the wind tunnel, running them through this, running through this, finding out which one is the best, picking the top one or two from that. So they spent money, and if it's $3,000 per hood, they bought 10 of them. Now you're talking $35,000, $30,000 to $35,000 to get two or three of the best out of that group. That is your decision on how you're spending your money, and this is where you were alluding to it. You know, that's, you need to change your business model. Not NASCAR needs to change theirs
exactly
and give you
right.
more money. So I see both sides to it. Like I said, I think there's some negotiation can be made, but NASCAR's being pointed at as saying they're taking the hard line my way or the highway. Well, if you're saying, hey, I'm going to take my ball or car and go home, you know, that's kind of a hard stance too.
Yeah, let's put this in perspective, Jay. When NASCAR came out with the next-gen car, their intention from the very beginning has been to level the playing field. Now, the teams that are standing up and saying these comments about how much money they're losing are teams that are excelling right now, and they're spending their money in a way that has, again, put NASCAR in a position of having an unlevel playing field. When you have teams that are spending that, they're talking about putting in a cap on that, by the way, where teams are spending excess money on parts, it's so that they can pick and choose the best parts to put on their cars. And that's why you have two teams like Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports that are out there outrunning everyone else. Because you've got these other teams that can't afford to do that, and they're not going to do that. Now, I'm not going to say, according to everything that I've read thus far, and how true it is, I don't know, because, again, I think that teams are posturing, and they're trying to position things in a way that favors their point. And that's something that everybody has to keep in mind when they're listening to both sides of this. And by the way, let me make myself really clear here, because I may have misled you, Jay. I'm not in favor one way or the other here. I'm trying to give you and fans an idea of what's being argued on both sides of the fence here. I'm not in favor of one side or the other. I'm really trying to just give you the story as it's being reported. Now I forgot where my point was going to be. But it has to do with NASCAR wanting to level the playing field. And now the teams that are standing up in the name of Denny Hamlin and Jeff Gordon and some of these other guys that are being more outspoken about this, those are the teams that are kind of unleveling the playing field, if you are, complaining that they're losing money, but at the same time they're spending money, as you said, in ways that are contradictory to what NASCAR's intention is. I think the other point, which is to level the playing field. So I can see where NASCAR is playing a little bit of hardball with that point, because what these guys are doing is outside the parameters of what their intentions are. Now, the other point that I wanted to make is that the leveling of the playing field, let me see if I can remember it now. With regard to, I really think that they need to have that unbiased party, some mediator who is an intermediary between NASCAR and the Race Team Alliance and the teams. I think that there needs to be an unbiased person in the middle of those negotiations and mediating the compromise between the two teams. I understand why NASCAR is holding fast to what their intention is. I think that these guys want to make it more permanent so that they can have that competitive advantage. If you think about the teams that are being more outspoken, it's the bigger teams. They want that competitive advantage back again. And that's why they're posturing for it. I'm not saying I'm for permanency with regard to the charters. I understand why NASCAR is doing it on a seven-year basis in line with their media rights agreements. And one thing, Michael Jordan is coming from a stick-and-ball environment. NASCAR is not a stick-and-ball environment. They're a different breed of sport, and I think it needs to be addressed as a different breed of sport. And I think what Michael Jordan, and I like Michael Jordan, but I think what he's trying to bring into NASCAR is totally different than the model that NASCAR has come up on and has been successful with. They're not going to die if they don't do it that way necessarily. Now, if they want to play games and not show up at races, that's on them. But I think the other point that was brought out by Jeff Gluck and Jordan Biante is that Speedway Motorsports and NASCAR own a lot of the tracks that they would go to race at. If they're going to play hardball, they're not going to probably be able to race at those tracks. So they're going to have to find other tracks to race at. And who's going to go racing with them? Now, they might want to try something, and they're certainly welcome to do that. But I don't think it's going to be as easy as they make it sound. So I do think that there needs to be compromise. Both sides need to come to the table with some sense of compromise in mind. But NASCAR owns their business. And they have a right, if their intention is to level the playing field to make it more competitive for everybody playing the game, there are unintended consequences that do come with that. And we've seen some of those unintended consequences. But I think that there are other things that they can do to keep that level playing field so that you don't have teams like Hendrick Motorsports, Joe Gibbs Racing, and so on, that dominate this sport, because nobody, let me tell you, nobody wants to see that from a fan perspective. And if anybody who thinks that fans want to see dominant teams in this sport, they're 100% wrong. We don't want to see that. We want to see all teams come into the sport and be competitive. And let me tell you something that will cause this sport to die, and that is if you don't have smaller teams able to compete with the big teams that are out there, because those teams will start fading up into the sunset, and this will be just one or two teams that are dominating this sport. And I don't think that's what anyone wants to see. So I do think that NASCAR it has a reason for why they're holding on to that part of their negotiations, is that if they want their sport to survive, all of these teams need to be competitive in this sport, and we don't need to have dominant teams, which is what we're seeing this year. And the reason we're seeing it is because they're doing things to gain that competitive advantage. It's been hard for them to do it. So the way they're doing it is they're spending that extra money to fine-tune the best parts for their cars. So I don't think that's good for the sport either. So there's a lot of ways that we can look at this. But you're right, Jay. We could talk about this for hours upon hours. What else do you want to add?
Yeah, I was going to say I'm going to try and keep the second round short, but yeah, you brought up something really key, in my opinion, of by forcing out the smaller teams. It's been a long time. I believe it goes back to Felix Sabatis. Maybe that gets credited with saying, if you want to make $1 million in racing, start with $2 million. But look at Formula One. There you're talking billions. You know, there is only four or five team owners that can be involved in that, because they got that kind of money. So you want to be careful of getting to that level. NASCAR's job is to make sure that teams are capable of putting on competitive race teams on the track for the on-track product. So like I said, the TV rights deal, there's a certain portion of the pie the teams get, go through that negotiation. However, And I'm going to be like you, Sharon, and I wasn't saying you had a particular opinion. I did. Reading that about the permanency of the charter system, I definitely have an opinion on that, and I shared. But, and this too came from a conversation on SiriusXM Speedway with Dave Moody, talking about how teams spend money. The airspeed, and again, I'm not trying to pick on Denny Hamlin or Michael Jordan. I'm thrilled that they're involved in racing. However, when it comes to their, it is not a race shop, it is a facility. Airspeed, state-of-the-art facility. I was trying to read through some of the stats on it, and I lost here. 114,000 square feet. Building design, the top of the windows slanted at 23 degrees for the number 23 with Michael Jordan and all. That's great. Great publicity and everything, but what do you suppose it costs to have the architect design that? Is that producing better on-track product? That's NASCAR's job. We're giving you money to provide on-track.
But it's also spending a heck of a lot of money that they could be losing. If they're losing money, maybe they need to think about how much they're investing in that building.
And that's where Dave Moody was going of, what does it cost to turn the lights on at that shop? What does it cost for the workman's comp under that facility? Here, the shop is the first building on a property with plans for a mixed-use project that could include commercial space, apartments, and a hotel. That is an entirely different investment you're choosing out of 2311's budget. But to say you're losing money then as a race team, what does that hotel have to do with your race team? And that was the point he was making of, you know, you're going to claim you're losing money. Is that really on racing, or is that on what you're doing in addition under the race team's name? And I say, I hate to pick on them. I think it's great. I was thrilled to see the win, what it brought to the sport with Michael Jordan. Talk about that. And you brought up a good point of Michael Jordan's philosophy maybe coming from a stick and ball franchise style thought process. And that goes into the charter system and the franchise. There was another point you had where you were talking about, salary cap. I know that's been discussed before. First off, I think there are only limited ways that you can – put a salary cap or limit on. We've seen that. NASCAR said you can only have seven cars.
But I was talking about, Jay, just to clarify, I was talking about putting a spending cap on the parts, because these guys are spending a lot of money on extra parts so that they can pick and choose the best parts. I was talking about a spending cap.
And I'm going to follow along with that. It was still on the spending, but no matter where they spend it, you can only spend this amount on pit crews or training pit crews. You can only spend this amount on air guns. I know we ran into that a few years back. NASCAR went to the one mod template or whatever. You couldn't design your own. So NASCAR has tried to help these teams restrict their spending. But when you look at it, do you really, if we get to a point of NASCAR says, okay, you can only spend so much on pit crews and their training, you can only spend so much on these parts, you're talking about 36 different teams than individual teams, some of them combined under one organization. Do we want to have NASCAR become about going through the records of verifying this is how much a team spent? What's that going to cost you to have a lawyer and a tax firm and whatever else provide this to NASCAR? NASCAR's now got to spend money to have somebody to go through all these numbers and say, no, you spent more than this amount on this area. You know, I mean, think that through. Like I said, of that's the road you're going to go down. NASCAR is going to become a financial institution of checking financial records. That's not what NASCAR's there for. That's where it just took me into that thought process.
If you
make a rule, you got to enforce it. If you're making a rule of a spending cap, you got to have some way to enforce it, and that would be an auditor, a financial auditor. That was just the road.
You could
it
also
took,
do it through the vendor. The vendor can only distribute X number of pieces. And that would be another way to do it. They only get X number of pieces per year. And after they hit that limit, that's it. So they might be able to pick and choose in the first half of the season, but then when you get to the last half of the season, now you got to use the pieces that are less nice. Or maybe you use the less nice pieces in the first half of the season and the best nice pieces in the last half of the season.
And that is too, but there again, like I said, you got to have some type of tracking, and NASCAR then has to focus, and they may sub it out to the vendors or whatever, but NASCAR would still have to get involved in tracking that and enforcing it if they want it to be adhered to some level. But like I said, that's one of those, again, of, you know, we're throwing out ideas. Yeah, that on paper, that sounds good. But what's the side effect or ripple effect of it, of now what is NASCAR doing? Going to these, even if it is just going to the vendors and saying, hey, how many did HMS buy? How many did so-and-so buy? You know, do we have to go to the shops and check? Do you only have so many here? You know, there's other effects to that when you think about that, of rather than just saying initially, okay, you can't do this. We know teams are gonna. You know, they talked about going back in the day of the beginning of you can only have so many tires, but you had your seven or eight sets when team so-and-so dropped out of the race, teams were starting to go down there. Hey, let me buy your tires. There again, the first one there, or the one with the most money, or the biggest dude they send down there, whoever was buying up those tires. However, it became a war of who had the most power, influence, whatever. NASCAR had to get involved in that. So they said, hey, no, period. You mark the tires, you better not have somebody else's tires on your car.
Yeah, you bring up some good points, and I hear what you're saying. And like I say, it's just talk right now. NASCAR's not saying that that's what they're going to do. But that is, again, going back to their intention of leveling the playing field. You've got teams that are going outside of that parameter to give themselves the competitive advantage, which is what we would expect them to do. But now we've got two teams that are dominating the races. In 11 races, seven of those races have been won by two organizations. So that is not a level playing field. So I can see where NASCAR is coming from when their intention is to level that playing field and the teams are not in line with that, then that if that is their goal, they have to come up with some idea. That's just one idea that was put out there. You're right. There are a lot of little legs that start to grow on these kind of things that make it a lot more complex than what it sounds like when you're just talking about it. So this is not going to be an easy task for NASCAR or the teams, but I just caution fans. The whole point of this conversation in my mind is to caution fans that you need to take a look at who's speaking out and why they're speaking out, and look at the bigger picture. I saw Denny Hamlin's, the show that was out on Netflix. There are a lot of things, and you mentioned the race, the facility for 2311. They're spending an enormous amount of money on that race facility. So it's not, they can't blame it all on NASCAR for why they are losing money. It just doesn't make sense. Some of that money is being rediverted into other things. And I think that the bigger picture needs to be taken into consideration. And Jimmy Johnson said it best. The teams are posturing themselves. NASCAR is posturing their position. And that's to be expected. That's not out of the norm when it comes to two sides and what they're talking about. I really... And where I'm coming from in all of this, I really think there needs to be a moderator, someone who is not on either side of these things, but can position both sides' position and look for the compromise. There are people, there are organizations that excel at being able to do that. And I really think that that's what they need to bring in, is an independent moderator in this particular situation that can look at the bigger picture of both sides and put it into perspective for both sides. We as fans are not privy to all of the details. I'll be the first person to acknowledge that. There's probably a lot of things that we don't understand on both sides of this thing because we don't have the information at our fingertips. When you bring in a moderator, that's their job, is to see both sides of this thing and all of those little particulars that we're not aware of and put it in perspective for both parties as well, to say, cut the bull crap here. This is what is actually happening. And so you're not going to get anywhere with that particular point. And this is the reason why. That argument is not an argument that you can bring to the table. That's what moderators and mediators do, so that they can get to the real meat of what needs to be negotiated. Again, keep in mind what we're watching unfolded before us is posturing. And they're trying to get the fans to take one side or the other. And that's where I think we have to be careful about what we're hearing right now, because it is posturing. We make no mistakes about it. They're not giving you the full picture. And as a fan, we need to be looking at the bigger picture of this thing. So, and I think guys like that, Godfather Moody, yourself, myself, that's what we're trying to do, is give you the bigger picture.
Yeah, and here, Sharon, is a perfect example, if I may. I like what you're saying. Bring in the moderator that's third party or neutral when it comes to that, just to help settle the agreement. That's a great idea on paper and in theory.
Yeah,
what's the next question? Both sides agree to it. Where does that money come from? They're already arguing over which percentage of the TV rights deal, and I'm just going to use that as that main source of income. does that money to pay for this moderator or company or organization to come in and do this, does that come out of NASCAR side? Does it come
everybody's
out of the driver's
pocket?
You see what I'm saying? What's that?
That's going to come out of everybody's pocket.
Well, and there again, then, now we're spending money to do something we could do ourselves. So can you look at that? Hey, let's come to our own agreement and not have to outsource this. And this is something I bring up because I went through this, believe it or not, at the church level of handling finances. Do we outsource it to a company and spend money to have them do it when if we had somebody within the church to come in and do it, it wouldn't cost us anything? You know, I mean, that's one of those of that money has to come from somewhere, and you're arguing over who gets what money. Now you're going to spend money to have somebody come in to decide who gets the money. Well, the money's not there no more.
Yeah.
You spent it, so
argument point.
Over.
No, it's a good point. I understand your point, but I know that there are auditors that come in and audit those types of situations. The concern, I think, when you're talking about a church is that money being managed correctly?
Right.
And so you can't audit yourself.
Right.
So,
well, and no, this wasn't even auditing. It was just handling it. And like I said, I'm in agreement that, I mean, that makes the most sense logically. You talked about bringing in that neutral party to try and just come to the agreement. That makes sense. You got two sides that are opposing, bring in the neutral and work out a deal. I'm just saying that that's that ripple of then, okay, well, now we have to spend the money. Now we're going to argue over, well, who has to pay for it? It's never ending
right.
is what I was getting to.
But again, if you have these guys out there kind of posturing themselves in a way that says, you know, the sport's going to die, teams
right.
aren't going to race anymore, you know, they're asking, they're putting themselves in a position of forcing NASCAR to spend that money. But that money's not going to come out of NASCAR's pocket. It's going to come out of their pocket, too. So they can't complain if that happens because it's their posturing that is putting them in that
position.
It's kind of like be careful what you ask for because there are consequences for asking for those things and for posturing in that way. There are consequences for those actions. And I'm just pointing out what some of those consequences could be. You're going to end up spending that money on something else that can help you come to an agreement. So be careful what you're asking for because there are consequences. That's the point that I'm trying to make.
Yeah, we'll have
and
to
that,
see how
by
it
the
plays
way,
out.
A mediator wouldn't just come out of the team's pockets or NASCAR's pockets because who do you think NASCAR's going to pass that on to or the teams are going to – it's going to come out of our pockets too. So,
well,
that could end up with less attendance because now it's more costly to go to a race once again.
That's very true. That's where I said you got to be careful of what sounds good and looks good on paper, that ripple effect. You're right. I hadn't even thought of it from that perspective of – yeah, okay. Both sides got the mediator and agree, and they don't want to pay it. They'd be like, well, let's see where we can get money from it. Oh, here, raise ticket prices. That's a good point, Sharon.
That's what I'm saying. It comes out of everybody's pocket. It comes out of everybody's pocket if we get to that point. So I know that these guys are trying to posture. They're trying to gain momentum for their point of view. But just keep in mind, there are other points of view to be taken into consideration here. And there is a bigger picture that they're not sharing with you. So Jimmy Johnson said it right. These guys are posturing right now. So as a fan, we need to keep that in mind, that that's what this is all about. They're trying to posture themselves to leverage their point to gain that advantage that they're looking for. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, I got nothing else. Like I said, this one's going to be ongoing. We're going to talk about it, guarantee at least once more when it's decided or they hit that stalemate and something else happens. So it'll come back throughout the racing season here.
Yes, yes. There's always an unintended consequence when these kind of things happen. Be a smart fan and just kind of watch it unfold and don't take a side on this without knowing all of the details. I think Jordan Bianche and Jeff Gluck did a good job with their article. They didn't take a stand one way or the other. They just reported what is happening. And as fans, we need to take it in and try to understand what's happening. Try not to take a side on this that so-and-so is right or so-and-so is wrong, because there are two sides to every story here, and that's what they're trying to accomplish with that article. Okay, so let's go ahead and do our sign-off, Jay.
All right, you can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. We talked about it early, whether or not it actually precipitates here, there's the threat of it. So I am not going to be at the baddest bowling in the South tonight at Columbus Speedway.
Oh, no.
And we were scheduled off for Jackson, your Capital City Raceway anyway. So I'm going to have to find something else to do for the weekend, which I'm sure I will.
Join Brian Eberle.
Right, yeah, let me see. Yeah, I might be able to make it there by Sunday's race. might be leaning on him as I take a nap, but.
Okay. Well, I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio on Facebook, as well as our website at fanforracing.com. Enjoyed doing the preview part of the show as well as our Hot Topic Sound Off with you, Jay. And I'm definitely looking forward to the races this weekend. I'm hoping that we'll see a breakthrough with Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports. They certainly have the advantages right now and seem to be dominating the sport. I'd like to see somebody break through with a win. Other than Chevy and Toyota, I don't know if Kansas is going to be the track where that happens, but you can always hope. Definitely looking forward to our review show on Monday night with Sal Segala. Hopefully we won't have technical issues like we did last Monday night. And Sal and I will be able to break it all down for you on Monday night. And then our Hot Topic Sound Off also on Monday night as well. So looking forward to next Friday and continuing with our Friday podcast now, Jay. And thank you for being available when Brian had kind of some last-minute things come up on Thursday this week.
No worries. It was my pleasure. And just to wrap it up, it is Hot Topics and Opinion section. So I want to propose one to you, Sharon. Give me a non-Joe Gibbs Racing or Hendrick Motorsports driver that wins this weekend, whether it be Toyota or not. But who do you think is going to win to break that two-organization win streak?
Well, my pick for this week was Kyle Larson. So that doesn't really break the mold, does it? Let me see if anybody picked anybody. I think all of our picks were either Toyotas or Chevys. Nobody picked anybody other than a Toyota or Chevy.
The twist there is 23-11. I believe Mike took, let me see if it was Mike, Tyler Reddick, which obviously 23-11 is a Toyota, not directly Joe Gibbs Racing, but you're right. No, I take that back. Brian has Ross Chastain, so there you go. He thinks it's going to be Trackhouse.
Yeah, but he's a Chevy. So yeah.
No, that's what I said. I'm not saying Chevy or Chevy Toyota. I'm just saying HMS and Joe Gibbs. So take those eight teams
okay.
out.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. So Chastain would certainly fit that bill, as does Reddick. But Reddick, I think, has a win already this season. Does he not?
Yep, he got it at Talladega, because that was Jordan's celebration.
That's right. So if I had a choice between those two, I'd choose Chastain.
I know it's based on previous history under Joe Gibbs Racing in Toyota. Kyle Busch is now in a Chevy for Richard Childress. We at least saw some speed out of him on the pole this past weekend. I know it's kind of hopeful, again, I'm with everybody else. I think your winner's going to come from one of those two organizations of Joe Gibbs and Hendrick Motorsports, as I took Chase Elliott to be the one for HMS. But Kyle Busch does have a good history with that track. We'll see if he can push it up a little bit with Richard Childress and the momentum they got going right now.
Yep, yep. But time always tells the rest of the story, Jay. We have to wait and see.
There you go.
Okay, so I'm going to have fun watching anyway. And we'll look forward to talking to you on the other side. And like I say, just a reminder, everybody, we're now doing our podcast on Fridays. So watch for our podcast come out on Friday afternoon. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Talk to you Monday.
Bye-bye.